Hello, and welcome to Recent Activity, your new favorite entertainment review podcast that attempts to cover every film, every show, all at once. I am your co-host, Andrew Morgan. With me, as always, is a man who is far and away my most imaginary friend, Mr. Shane Beauregard. How are you, sir?
Doing well, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, first and foremost, happy anniversary to you, buddy.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
We celebrated our two-year anniversary like this podcast absolutely should by not having an episode. So, congratulations. We are the worst.
But you love us anyway. You love us
exactly, anyway. Yeah. So, awesome there. And we're still climbing. We're almost to 100. We're at 96, I want to say.
96, yeah.
Right now. So, we're still chugging along. We'll probably get to 100 sometime, what, in August? Yeah. We're such jerks. But before we move on to this impressively long slate that we have today, because we did miss a week and there was so much this weekend, did you catch the reference as I teased in the off? And I'm going to guess no.
You set me up for failure and I dropped the ball.
That is a Lemonhead song.
I do remember the Lemonheads, yes.
If I could talk that day. Yeah.
If this was 1996, I would have gotten that.
Yeah, man. If this was 1996, we'd all be a lot happier, I think, in a lot of ways. As a person who spent his weekend at a ska punk fest, a two-day ska punk fest, yes, 1996 was fucking killer. But good to see you, man. Obviously, with the week off, we were still busy. Maybe what's weird is, again, we're in these certain weekends where it's like we're busy as hell watching so much stuff, and then we didn't catch it all. We didn't get to everything we wanted. It's just like an overdose. Like, I'm mad. I think we said this at the last episode where it was like, all right, we're going to have Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes or whatever in one weekend. And then, oh, by the way, the following weekend, five new movies will come out all at once. And you're going to be like, what do I do? I can't watch five movies in a weekend. What are we talking about? Especially when I have ska punk festivals.
Yeah.
So this weekend, it was I like to call it the Walmart weekend. It was a something for everybody, you know, kind of a weekend. Because you had, we're going to talk about If, because you and I both saw that. Then there was the Amy Winehouse biopic Back to Black came out. You had I Saw the TV Glow, which has been like a kind of critical darling for a few months now, since it was I believe it premiered at Sundance, if I'm not mistaken. And then what else? The Strangers Chapter One came out, which neither of us saw, so we won't be covering that today. And then Babes, that Alana Glazer film about her getting pregnant or whatever, came out as well. So a lot of stuff. And meanwhile, if just looking at the box office, this is the funniest thing for me, right, Shane? Now, after Kingdom has been out for what, 2 weeks now?
2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks. The top 2024 movies at the box office, domestic, three of them now involve animals fighting each other.
Yes.
We have Godzilla X Kong at 2, Kung Fu Panda 4 at 3, and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is now in the 5 spot at 100.7 million domestically.
All right.
Yeah. Hilarious, right? And to be honest, you saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Are there any animal on animal violence in that movie?
No, that one is, yeah, no.
No,
animal,
okay.
Animal, no.
Just demon, ghost kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, just ghost on ghost.
Yeah. And then Dune Part 2, not really either. It's sandworm versus man at best, right? Okay. So just wanted to make sure that I did not omit something else where animals were fighting. But again, it's been an interesting weekend because If did win the weekend, came in at 33.7 in terms of domestic box office. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was second at 25. So that means it basically kind of it held pretty well.
Yeah.
Even on a strong weekend, Strangers Chapter One was third, Fall Guy in fourth, and Challengers was fifth. Challengers, we haven't even talked about this. Dude, they're at 78 million for Challengers. which, and 43 of that domestic. So that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty good.
For a small movie like that, that I thought was going to do kind of the, you know, the prestige movie thing where it just kind of comes out. It's out for a couple of weeks. People love it on VOD or whatever. We'll see it again at the Oscars. This one's kind of almost getting into Poor Things territory, where mm-hmm. Poor Things like quietly made like $100 million. This might be that, which would be very interesting,
yeah,
which
good.
I think makes for a better Oscar run later if this can kind of, you know, just hold its own for a little while longer, make in the 80s or 90 million, and then go from there. That'd be awesome. Yeah,
that would be good. Deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's start with If, because we both saw that over the weekend. This is written and directed by John Krasinski, who obviously everybody knows for something one way or another, whether it's The Office, whether it's creating the Quiet Place franchise, or what have you. But he also co-stars in this film that is more led by Ryan Reynolds, Kaylee Fleming, who we can get to it in now or in a little bit. I thought she was probably one of the biggest bright spots of this for like young actors, you know, who can like sink a movie like this. I thought she was really good. It also has a tremendous amount of voices in here because this is all about imaginary friends. We have Steve Carell, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Louis Gossett Jr., who I guess is that his last thing? Didn't he pass away recently?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Bobby Moynihan's a real person in this one.
Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah, there was George Clooney. Richard Jenkins, I remember being one. There's a huge long
Brad
list.
Brad Pitt.
Yep. So like it's like basically redoing Ocean's 11, but as imaginary friends, apparently. This is a kind of like, you know, computer animated mixed with humans story about a young girl who goes through a difficult experience, who begins to see everyone's imaginary friends who have been left behind as their real life friends have grown up. Like I said, this won the box office for the weekend, but did it win your heart, Shane Beauregard? And also, did you see it with your kids? Because I do want to know the younger perspective, too.
I did not see it with my kids. I saw this by myself in a theater full of kids.
Savage. I purposely went to go see it with another person because I was like, nope, I don't want to see this in the like early on a Sunday with like a bunch of kids. I did not want to do that. So,
well, because yeah, of my schedule for the weekend, it's like the only time I had is when they were in bed, like at eight o'clock. I was like, I got to go fit this in now. Anyway, so I did fit it in, and thank God I didn't take my kids. Cause I'll tell you, my 10-year-old would have been bored to tears, and my 13-year-old may have gotten this movie because let me tell you the problem I had with this movie. This is, to me, I'll just say off the bat, this is a swing and a miss for John Krasinski. This movie was not good at all. Like, it was just not good. It, like, to me, it tried to balance, if it tried to walk the line of, should we make this a full-blown kids movie, or is this more like young teens to adult movie? Like, it kind of walked in between the two worlds of that, because, in my opinion, there wasn't enough humor for the kids to really tag along, and when we did get humor, it was already 50 minutes into the movie, I thought. So it starts out like any Disney movie.
Somebody has to die.
Someone has to die. We get that, right? So Bee's mother passes away, and she kind of narrates the beginning of the movie and tells us how important stories are. And then apparently her dad's in the hospital for heart surgery. So yeah, it's a good, you know, to start a movie to get the kids' attention, like death and like potential death. With mother and father unit.
Yeah.
But he's well enough to pull pranks in the hospital room. We don't know exactly what kind of heart condition he has, but he has a broken heart. So B has to like suppress her emotions, which I thought was the best part of the movie. She carried whatever she could in this movie.
Agreed.
Some nice world building if they would have like dove into it, and some good scenes, like just set pieces and scenes like the Coney Island stuff.
Right.
But it's like, they don't explain why the stories are so important. You got a grandmother who's a delinquent, lets her 12-year-old granddaughter run all over New York, not knowing where she's at. You get...
I did take note on that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you get these ifs. Once we finally get into it, it's like, okay, so what happens if you don't pair them with their kid? It's kind of implied that they disappear, but not really, because they're in retirement homes. And it's just
one of them's 90 something years old and apparently ages.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just the writing.
He's like the only one that does.
Yeah, the writing was just all over the place in this movie. It just wasn't a cohesive story, and they didn't tie enough things together for me. And honestly, Andrew, I don't think I even chuckled one time in this movie. Like, it wasn't funny. It lacked humor.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest issue with it. I would have forgiven a lot of the stuff with this if it made me laugh and was a flat-out kids movie. But to me, he swung and missed on this big time. And we'll get into like some of the stuff towards the end with like them trying to like use the adults now to reconnect the ifs with. And that made less sense to me. Like, really, if you think about what they say, it's like they got to remember us. Well, they did stuff that wouldn't trigger them to remember their ifs, but somehow they started remember. I don't know. It was just a flat out mess. And B is Kaylee Fleming is the only thing that saved this movie and made it decent to me. So anyway, all that to say was swing and miss. I didn't like it. It just, I don't know. It had issues.
Yeah, I also like John Krasinski here. I didn't have a problem with him either. I thought he's kind of like the fun dad and kind of lights up the beginning a little bit just to keep that going. But I agree with you for the most part because this movie is kind of a mess and doesn't ultimately, I don't feel it really honed in on the point.
Right.
Of it, which is obviously where it falls apart the most. And the world building is kind of fun.
Yeah.
At times. And the character designs are actually quite well done as far as like the animation and things of that nature. The weird part, though, is you're right. For how good the voices are, I don't think they fleshed out like the actual characters themselves, or they weren't as fun. They were like visually fun, but there wasn't like a lot of like strong humor in them, which stinks. Like, there was one that I liked, you know, and again, very sparing and also kind of, I don't know, went back and forth, was the Private Eye.
Yes.
One.
Voiced by Brad Pitt.
Yeah, right. So I thought that was kind of fun, and I wonder if he added anything to, like, drum it up a little bit or any of those type of things. But I don't know. You're absolutely right. It's so tough for this movie because it is kind of stuck in between, but I also, when I'm watching this movie, as far as the age level, it is stuck in between. You're right with that. But there's so many movies. This is a, quote, family movie, mm-hmm. right? Where, like, you can't take someone too young. Like, this isn't a Pixar movie or a Despicable Me or something like that. It feels like those, like, 90s or 80s type, you know, I don't want to say Amblin. It's not that. Because it doesn't never gets as serious, and it never, I don't know. Literally, they play with kid gloves with this right. one. They never try to get too serious, and they never get funny enough to make up. It's literally tonally just flat.
Yeah.
You know, and with a few exceptions. So that's the tough part, I think, about this movie, because a lot of it will be just forgettable. And especially because you don't get the consistency. The only time I feel like I really connected in any kind of way, like emotionally or whatnot, was when she's visiting her dad towards the end, when he's out of surgery.
Right.
That's about it. Like, that is just genuine. Like, she's really good. You care about him enough. And so anything that if she connects it right, she could do it. And she does.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, yeah, she's the best part of this. And, you know, everything else kind of just is what it is.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not going to remember this. I think based on the character design and the hope for fun is why people came out for $35 million, I guess. I just wonder if this has legs because it's fine.
I don't think it's going to have legs because if you go based on trailer alone, kids are going to think, oh my God, this is going to be so funny. That's the way they set it up. Like, this is going to be a kid's movie, right?
Yeah, my kids really want to see it, yeah.
With Steve Carell's character falling all over the place and doing all his shtick, right? But I think once they go into the theater, it's like, again, my 10-year-old would have been bored, dude.
Yeah.
Do you agree, like, 40, it doesn't really pick up till she goes to Coney Island and get into that atmosphere with the other ifs. And that takes a while to get to.
Right.
And even then, like I said, it had so much potential within that little framework that he built with that world. It just, like, he didn't do enough. Like, why? I know they're probably all his friends, but it's like, why have I don't know, Bill Hader in there to say two lines, or Amy Schumer to have a line as the gummy bear person. Like, she had, like, right. you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I felt they wasted some of this voice talent with these characters. It's like, okay. Like, I could rattle off better Imaginary Friends movies for kids, you know, like, rest in peace, Dabney Coleman, but like, yeah, Cloak and Dagger was one of my favorite movies growing up, you know?
Right. Well, this movie caught a lot of, like, isn't this Drop Dead Fred?
Drop Dead Fred, right.
Yeah, yeah. But the interesting part, too, is that you talked about a waste. Why would you choose Ryan Reynolds to not be funny?
Yeah, I had a question. Some of the people at work were like, well, how is Ryan Reynolds? Like, well, it's not your typical Ryan Reynolds. He doesn't do his shtick. Like, he's not Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a different Ryan Reynolds, which I didn't mind, but, like, yeah, I wanted more of Ryan Reynolds. And he was not that at all.
No, and they play the thing I've been saying, like, a lot lately, I feel, where it's like they try to hide the football with one particular thing.
Yep.
And it kind of wastes his character in the process a little bit. So, yeah, it's tough. But, yeah, ultimately, it's a dramedy, which is weird, with an animated thing and doesn't fully grab hold of its audience or the point of its story.
Right. I mean, if you want to take out the underlying, I'll just wrap it up by saying this. Like I said, I think my 13-year-old may kind of like it, because the underlying theme really is with the Bee's character, like, suppressing some of her emotions and wanting not to be a kid anymore. Just like, she's an adult. That's what she wanted to go as. So, I mean, like, it is about, like, just overcoming and letting your emotions come out and just tackling life as a kid. And it just went about it the wrong way, I thought, for the most part. So,
I feel like I keep saying a lot of the same things with some of these movies so far with 2024, where there's a lot of movies where it's like, yeah, the vibes were good, but it just didn't come together as a story enough for me to do it. And at least this movie sort of landed at the end.
Yeah, like, at least it
made some semblance of sense. But even then, like, there was stuff towards the end that they just kept trying to find the magic, try to find the point so many times, and it lost itself. But what you are gonna end on, Shane, is actually the score. I'm curious to know where you are.
I am given a solid 2.
Ooh, yeah, that's way lower than
I thought. Sorry, I know.
Were
I
you
can't.
Like, visibly upset with this movie? That's like quite low.
No, I wasn't visibly upset. I was expecting more laughs, and I was honestly kind of getting bored with the movie. I just was sitting there kind of silent most of the time, and I didn't hear any laughter in the theater. Again, I saw with a bunch of 8-year-old to 14-year-old people in there with their families, and I think the only part the audience laughed at is the whole gummy bear fart scene where, like, he's like, I could taste it with my eyes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think was in the trailer.
Yeah. That's it, though. So, yeah. It's too much of a mess, man. Maybe I'm being too harsh, but I'm not going away from my gut instinct when I got done with this movie. I was like, that was a waste of, not time, but it was just a waste of potential in this movie.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not too far off from it. I'm stuck between, if I'm going to probably Andrew cheat code this to 2.75.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, because I feel like somehow I feel 2.5 is too low, 3 feels too high. But it's weird, again, you know how I always do, where I kind of like match it up against other films of the year. And it's like, some of the 3s I felt like maybe I'm a little more forgiving. Like Immaculate. That movie was, again, another movie that was like vibes, predictable. You know, the ending kind of was messy, but I still gave it a 3 because it's Sydney Sweeney and the vibes were good. This, like, I can make a case that girl who's like kind of the center of the frame is really good.
Yeah.
And the vibes are good. Like, it doesn't just, it's not, it might fall flat or be a little boring at times, but it never is like frustrating or annoying. So that's where I'm like, it's somewhere in that range for me.
Yeah. So I can see your point. I can see it.
We'll never talk about it again. It's just, I'm going to have to just be me and do that, of course. So the other stuff from the weekend, because I believe that's all you got to as far as the movie theater stuff was concerned. So I'll just go through real quick. I saw Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic. Shane, how well do you know Amy Winehouse's story? Because I feel like I knew that she, you know, died of an overdose, and or at least some version of that. And I knew a couple songs. That's about it.
Yeah, me
so
too.
So if you into this, that's where you'd land to beforehand?
Yep. Exactly.
So this is one of those, it's very straightforward. I felt like I learned a few things, which is helpful. Especially because, like I said, I didn't know a lot about her growing in. And I feel like it was, I felt like it was a little generous on her life. That it was for how much her troubles caused everything and how, you know, they're going to blame a lot on her relationship with this, the man who she eventually married. And he, you know, they, whenever they break up, she falls apart and she ends up even worse. And he also introduced her to like hard drugs, or at least looked, made it look like hard drugs were cool or passable when she had kind of like a no hard drugs, anti hard drugs stance in her own life before then. So it does kind of put a lot of blame on him. It puts a lot of blame on their relationship. It puts a lot of, I don't know. It makes it very easy to kind of just go, oh, she was perfect. She was this nice, put-together person with a great voice. She was so good. She loved her Grammy. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, she's a fucking coke and meth. Or I don't know if she did meth, but crack, maybe. I don't know. She, like, smoked cocaine. So I assume it's crack rock, you know, crack whatever stuff. She had a pipe. That's all I know. I'm not a drug person, Shane, you know, as you can see.
Did you watch New Jack City?
Yeah, yeah. Not in a while, and I think maybe that's the problem here. But I don't know. I came out of it liking a few more of her songs. I came out of it impressed with the person who played Amy Winehouse, especially because, like, previously I had only seen her in Barbie, I believe, and she wasn't even a big part. Yeah, it was Marissa Abella, I believe. So a person that I really hadn't seen too much of. I guess she's in Rogue Agent too for Netflix. But yeah, don't know a ton about her. So yeah, not too much. Young actress, did a really good job. Eddie Marsan's in this, doing pretty well. Like, it's not a lot of like known people in here, but it's what it is. It's one of those, like, just, it's a biopic. It's gonna run through. I at least maybe admired the fact that it wasn't like some like pop musical kind of version right. of her life, that it was a little more played straight to trying to be a drama to show all the warts and everything. But I feel like at the end of the day, it also felt kind of sanitized, maybe like one of those like approved by the family version right. of their lives, where it's like, let's not make this too harsh. It was very, it looked very clean and like pristine. Like, it didn't get very like dark. Like, it had some style to it. It's getting dragged a little bit by people, but like, I think it honestly had like a 6 point something on IMDb. That's fine. That's okay. Right. You know, if it's a, it might be a 3, you know, like, that's just, it's right there somewhere in that range. It's probably similar in my scoring to Imaginary, quite frankly, where it's like, you know, it's probably hovering right around 3. It might be a 2.75, but like, it's in that range. So this was kind of the thing I said to you going into the weekend, that I was like, based on the scoring, it's like, we might be in for, yeah, there might be 5 movies that you could see, but it's all very middling or possibly bad. Right. So, which, sorry to the art crowd here in advance. I saw the TV Glow, which came out over the weekend, which I believe the first thing that I sent to you was this warning. This is not a Shane movie. Repeat. This is not a Shane movie.
All caps.
Yes, all caps. And again, even... Again, this is tough because it currently has a 3.7 on Letterboxd. So this is like an adored art movie by people who saw it at Sundance and obviously, you know, who caught it over the weekend. But the description of it should tell you enough, where it kind of doesn't tell you shit And also that might give you a tip as to like where this movie kind of heads. So teenager Owen is just trying to make it through life in the suburbs when his classmate introduces him to a mysterious late night TV show, a vision of a supernatural world beneath their own. In the pale glow of the television, Owen's view of reality begins to crack. This movie felt like it wanted to be Lynchian in that way, but I'll say this for how much I have an up and down relationship with David Lynch too. But most of the time with David Lynch, I go, I know what you're doing. It's just whether I enjoy the ride or not. This one, I had a hard time really kind of trying to capture what they were doing with this, because it spans like a long time. You have, I believe his name is Justice Smith, right? Yes, yep. Correct. Who plays Owen. And I like him in a lot of stuff. I like him as an actor. I even kind of, I'm fine with him in this. The problem is he plays his teen, like high school self, like a 14, 15 year old version of himself. He plays like a 20 something version of himself, like late 20s version of himself. He plays like, he like has a family version of himself. So he's got to be like maybe in his 30s. And he also plays like him kind of in his 50s. Or 60, somewhere like later in life version of himself. And the differential is not very good. And his older version is just hard to kind of do because, I don't know, the makeup effects didn't work for me. But it's supposed to be like a transgender allegory in some fashion, I believe. Which, again, that's why I don't want to like rake this movie over the coals. I just think it wasn't for me and it didn't lock in with me. Because, again, another movie where I'm sitting here going, I really like the cinematography. I like the look of this film. I don't have a problem with any of the performances. I just kind of don't know what I'm supposed to take away from the film or where the film is supposed to go. And I think it's supposed to play on, obviously it's playing on fandom and such, where, you know, you fall in love with a show that you wish was your reality and kind of, and it's escapism, you know, especially because this is set in the 90s, I believe. So, and the show kind of even has the same creeper font as Buffy the Vampire Slayer and has a Monster of the Week thing to it. So I don't know if it's supposed to be like some offshoot idea of that too. So again, very 90s, but I just couldn't lock in. And honestly, cause you're supposed to be playing between these two lead characters who are supposed to become stronger friends, bonding over the show or any of that stuff. They don't even watch the show together for like a long time. And they kind of separate them. She disappears in the movie, literally. Like, they don't know whether she's dead or lost or something, any of it, for like 10 years.
Okay.
And so this movie is mostly Justice Smith and he's just kind of all over the place, and they, I don't know, I guess it's supposed to be about like identity and how you're supposed to see yourself or how these things can affect you, and yeah, especially in that time period where maybe it's hard to be either trans or queer in any kind of way, and especially small town version of that, and wanting to run away and figure yourself out. But I wasn't picking up what they were putting down as far as like trying to sell those ideas and show me more under the surface than what was there. And it ends on a very weird note. I don't even want, like, it's one of those things I could probably tell you a scene from any part of this movie and it won't spoil anything. That kind of movie. You know what I mean? I could tell you the end and you'd be like, okay. Like, that doesn't do anything for you. And honestly, it did nothing for me. So, it's a bizarre one. I don't even have a score in mind because I don't know what I saw. So if I can't be like, if I don't have a strong feeling one way or another, I guess I'd have to give it like a 2, 2.5, because like, it was a movie. Right. You know what I mean? So, and people are going to be like, holy shit, dude, that's a big difference between the 3.7 or whatever. I'm like, yeah, because I think this is a movie that's going to be polarizing. And I think critics want to or either they like this sort of artsy Lynchian whatever stuff more already, and this vibes with them, or it's like, this is, you don't know what to do with this, and you don't know what this, like, you're just gonna reject it. So I'm mostly in the reject thing, although there's talent all around. I don't get why everyone's just gaga over this movie. And honestly, you know how you feel about some of these things. Letterboxd is like, critics are on there. Cinephiles, it's a stronger cinephile thing. They have a 3.7. If you look at IMDb, I want to say it's got like a mid six or lower, like where it might have around the same scores as If. You know what I'm saying? So right. Like, I think, and that's more general audience stuff. So I think ultimately this movie's legacy is going to get cult status with cinephiles. I can't see this being an Oscar play. Like, maybe a screenplay thing, but I just can't. It must be a very weak year if it sneaks in. But I can't see it lasting all the way to the end of the year where we'll keep talking about this movie. I can't see it. Even though it's A24 and it only made like $1 million over the weekend. So I don't even know if that's limited. It's whatever, but, you know, I'm lost with it. I'm lost with it. I probably said too much already, but like, it's one of those things I'm working it out still. And even though I saw it yesterday and I'm still just dizzy about the whole thing. You finally ended Sugar this weekend. So you're the last guy I think who's watching it. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I know a couple other people in my life who are watching it. It's Apple TV Plus, but it's got Colin Farrell and it's got it has the right catnip for me to watch it. So sell this to me. Where did it land for you? And should I also watch it?
It's a weird show. I'll just say that off the bat. It's 8 episodes. Like I said, I just wrapped it up this weekend. You have Colin Farrell, Amy Ryan is in this, and James Cromwell and Anna Gunn. So those are some actors and actresses you may know.
Sure.
And basically Colin Farrell plays a detective, private investigator, who examines the mysterious disappearance of Olivia Siegel, the granddaughter of a legendary Hollywood producer. So he's a PI by trade, but his character is into the old classic detective story. So periodically throughout the episode, you'll have like a black and white, like just a short scene from one of his favorite movies that kind of relates to what he's going through or like his scenario in his head.
Right.
It's just a good old fashioned detective story, which Colin Farrell just kind of is. Colin, if you are a fan of Colin Farrell, he kind of eats everything up. Like, this is I think a great role for him.
Right.
Where it gets wonky is you as this episodes are going along, you're kind of thinking to yourself, okay, what is going on with his character? Because he has this condition where like his hand will tremor, or he'll like fall down, and like he's taking a mysterious drug. And you're like, okay, is he hooked on heroin here? Like, what is like up? He has a handler who handles his cases, but yet they have like a get together in like episode 3. And it's all these rando people, but they're all part of like this organization. Like, what the flip is going on here?
Right.
And then episode 6 happens, which they finally have the big twist. And you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it, because it takes the show into a totally different direction. Like, it does a complete pivot and you're like, oh shit, okay, this is going on now. But it does piece together the questions you may have about his character, like, now it makes perfect sense what the hell's going on here.
How many episodes in total?
8.
Okay.
And they're 35 minute episodes.
Okay.
It's a shorter kind of range here. So much so, after I watched episode 6, I Googled it, and they shopped this script around to other streamers, and they turned it down because of the turn in episode 6. Like, they didn't, they thought it just took the show in a weird, different direction. They actually turned it down, and Apple's like, okay, we'll take it. And I'm kind of glad they did. And the last 2 episodes, once we find out after episode 6 what's really going on, there's still enough layers here, like, okay, this is going to lead to something else, because as he's solving one case, he has all these different parties trying to stop him from solving his case. You understand why, and it just opens a world up to like, oh shit, now you got all these several parties now we got to pay attention to. and it just goes off, and it does set you up for a season two. And I'm like, please, Apple, pick up a season two, because there's so much more story you can go on. It just, it doesn't leave you like in a cliffhanger. I will say that, like, it wraps, it kind of wraps up what it wanted to get across, but it leads you with all this new information you have. It leads you into like, oh, here we go. Let's get at it. Right. So, man, I liked it. Did I love it? Certain episodes I really like, but I would say this is one of the better shows. It wouldn't crack my top five, but it would be, you know, in the middling 6 to 8 range right now.
Right.
And I'm not saying that because I'm biased and slanted towards Colin Farrell, but he's like perfect for the role, man. And he's Colin Farrell. And the supporting cast is really good. So it has enough intrigue in this show and enough storyline and depth for me to latch on to a season two. So, but I do warn you, like, you may get to then episode 6, like, I'm out. And I understand because it turns into a different genre, kind of.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's what I'll say. Which is tough because I do love me a hard-boiled detective story.
Yeah.
So
it is that.
If it switch stances off of that, then obviously that's where I might have to break. But
there's still, he's still an investigator all the way through. It just, man, it just sets you on a different course of just a different genre altogether. But he's still a PI all the way through the show.
Okay. And so to at least give a little insight, I wanted, once you said about the twist and where maybe people feel about the ending, I'm looking at the scores that they do per, like, they, you could individually rate the episodes in IMDb, and the scores before episode 6 are kind of like between 7.5 and 8. And then after episode 6 is actually stronger.
Okay, good. Episode. That's good. So that's good to hear.
I think people bought it, or at least this small sample size, people seem to have bought it. So, and it seems like you are, but it's not like such a high that you're like, this is vaulted into one of the better things you've seen. It's just, it was more enjoyable than maybe some people might have in that experience.
Exactly. It's a good, solid show. Like I said, it's for, especially since like at this time, well, before June hits, like at the time it came out, didn't really have any competition per se. And again, it'd be like my 6th, 7th best show of the year so far, like just outside my top 5. But like, yeah, it's good enough for you to at least start and then see if you like it from there.
Before we get to other stuff, I am curious about two things, and they revolve around, because we've had in the past episodes dedicated to Apple TV Plus. Mm-hmm. And like, there's been some shows that we absolutely love from them. You know, I could say, like, off the top of my head, like Blackbird, Shrinking, Ted Lasso, amazing, right? Like, and even, I won't get into how Ted Lasso ended, but for the most part, I love watching Ted Lasso. And there's probably some other shows I'm missing in between. How do you feel about them now? I feel like they've been kind of backsliding lately. The difference is that, and you seem to watch more than I do of this year's offerings, it seems too, because you watched Monarch, and I don't know if you watched any other ones besides Sugar and Mar. I feel like you may have
watched. I watched The Big Door Prize.
Oh, that's season 2 or no?
I didn't. I just watched the first season of that.
I think that's older. Yeah. I'm talking about newer. Like probably within the last year or so.
I feel like I watched Monarch, and there was another show I was watching on Apple, and I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. So
yeah, I never got to Masters of the Air. I you know, I'm interested in that. I haven't gotten to that. It's so weird that they have all these shows. I really wanted to watch that Manhunt thing about Abraham Lincoln's killer, John Wilkes Booth, and all that stuff. And the chase for him, I heard very kind of okay things. You know, right. So like, I haven't heard them kind of get back to where I was like, oh man, these guys are the new HBO or those type of vibes. I haven't felt any of those things. And the weird part is I also don't associate, like, say, Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon with Apple.
Right.
So maybe that kind of, you know, if I did, maybe it would help its cause, but like, but if I'm also even going to take those into consideration, you got to take into consideration Argyle is a Apple film too. So it's like, well, good with the bad, right?
Right.
So, And Argyle's the more recent and the 2024 version. So, like, I don't know. When we're coming into this, you know, this killer June we're about to come up to with several shows that we're all interested in and how 2024 has gone for Apple so far, I feel like it's been diminishing returns or at best middling.
Yeah, you're right. Because right now they released Dark Matter last week with Jennifer Connelly and Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
And based on the first episode alone, it has my interest. So I'm hoping that gets, you know, that's a good one. And they released The Big Cigar, which is a biopic this week. I haven't got into that one yet. But you're right. Like, for 2024 so far for Apple has been kind of a backslide, just slightly.
Yeah.
But still good enough TV show. They don't have one like, oh, this is awful. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to watch this. Like, they at least pique your interest for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they at least pick a lot of, like, books that were, like, bestsellers and try to make the best of whatever they got. But even, like, ones that I, you know, like Palm Royal or whatever didn't look that great. And then
I tried that one.
Brie Larson's show, that Lessons in Chemistry, I heard very kind of like mid or negative things about that.
See, so I heard positive things about that. Several clients who watched it and they loved it.
Interesting. Yeah, because I mean, as far like, again, I'm going off of like podcasts that like cover these type of things and they kind of like dismissed it a little bit. So I don't know. I'm just, you know, spitballing, kind of taking the temperature of everything I've heard and without indulging in a lot of these things. That's why I was curious if you watched more than what I did. But I believe they just renewed Monarch, though. Congratulations.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So at least you got that going for you. So, okay, let's move on here. So if we're staying, I'll just bang through these real quick. You and I both watched Baby Reindeer, which is like a huge show. Like, so many people are watching it. They're all stunned by it. And the story is amazing. I will tell you, for like a small show that seems like, you know, it's not like some star-studded thing. And it's not, it basically feels like a filmed true crime doc in a way. By all accounts, it's so damn compelling. I finished that season in a night.
Yeah,
because it's so bingeable. Obviously, it's Netflix, so it is a binge model, and they're like half hour episodes, and you just can't wait to see the next stuff. And it gets darker and twisted and more sad as it goes along, so it's kind of hard to deal with at times, but it won't stop you from like, I need to see what happens next.
It's a great show. It is. And I think I told you about it and it's like, man, cause it starts you off on one path and then you go on another path. You're like, oh man, it's like awkward, dark, but yet funny at times. It's just, so gives you everything. And there's stuff you laugh at that you probably shouldn't be laughing at. And then it's like, you know what I mean? But it's a compelling show is all I'll say. Because I went into it, like I told you, I went into it cold. And it wasn't until after I watched the show and I did my research on it, like, oh my God, this is a true story. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. So like, this guy introduced it, I believe, at the Fringe Festival and then got picked up from there for the development deal of how it went down. So, and the tough part too is I was kind of talking about this with another person about like, if you're really into the show, it's worth, I believe, I don't know if it was 60 minutes or Dateline. Somebody had an interview with the real Martha recently because she's suing, I guess, for like slander or whatever. Terms that she's saying where it's not accurate, but the interview with her, she's so Martha that you're just like, there's no fucking way that this is made up. Not to mention, like, if there is that, you know, because the show portrays it as there's a lot of evidence here, like all those voicemails and all the stuff that he has. So if these things exist, how the hell can you explain that away?
You can't. She's crazy.
Yeah, she's bonkers. Not to mention, like, if you just line up if all those things about her past are true and everything else. So, you know, it's the tough part, though. Now in real life, I feel like I now see more potential Marthas in my real life. Do you have this happen? Because, like, there are people, like, I've come across in old jobs and stuff where I go, that woman or man must have, like, the saddest home existence you'd ever imagine. Yeah. And if they just locked on with someone who half cared about them, it'd be, like, the worst.
Yeah.
But then, like, now I see them in, like, public where these people are just, like, messes. Like, to give you a half-hearted example, I was at the movies when we went to go see Back to Black. There was a woman in the first row who had her dog in a sweater and a tutu and let it roam through the first, like, to where the dog came up to me and wanted, like, attention and stuff. And just walks it around, took the dog for a walk in the middle. She's talking in the movie. I'm like, pure Martha energy right now. And I'm like, I am not going to engage with this woman, even though I'm petting her dog. I'm just going to be like, okay. I can just see if I was too nice, I could see where she would have followed me to my car. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. You're a better person than me, because I would have kicked that dog.
Don't do that. We're going to get canceled, dude. What are you doing?
And I'm a dog person. I love dogs. I know. But I just, people who, whatever, man. I wouldn't have kicked the dog, people. I wouldn't have. But I would have been mad enough to say something to the lady about getting her dog out of the theater.
Yeah, I would have, or freed that dog. Yeah. You know, just set it free. Just get rid of two birds, one stone. But yeah, man, it's tough because now I just see it everywhere. And it's just like the potential of a stalker. A few other things. Before I'll save the rattle off for last. Congratulations to both of us, I guess, for Shogun season 2.
Yeah,
coming shocker. Back, which very much a shocker. In fact, they changed their Emmy status to being not a limited series, now to being a full on drama. Oh, okay. So they didn't have to go up against some, like, maybe heavier competition in the limited series one, because it seems like every series is a limited series these days, you know, it feels like. Also, congratulations to us for The Boys renewing for season 5 ahead of its season
ahead
4.
Of it. Yes.
So that's amazing. I think that has as much to do probably with where the story is right now with Homelander, his son, and everything else, all that going on, as much as it does with possibilities with Gen V.
Right.
Do you buy that?
I buy that, yep.
So that's pretty cool too. And then real quick, a few movies I caught up with. I'll start with Arcadian because you reviewed it here. I'm on board.
Yeah.
This was a solid movie. I think if I had to narrow down, like, why you would need to see this movie is, first and foremost, the aliens are freaking bizarre.
Right?
They're like, I remembered your description being like, they're like, what did you say, like, alien ostriches or something like that, something like, with that. And but, like, the takeaway truly is, holy shit, that clackety clack thing that they do is fucking insane. I don't even know what that noise is. Like, I was like, it sounded almost springy and motorized. It was weird but effective because it sticks with you. So those type of interactions I thought were pretty cool. I did like the brothers. You were like, it develops into more of a brothers, like a family thing. And I agree. I like that aspect the most. It kind of opens up where it could be something more. I don't know if it will, because the movie is so small. I would be surprised, especially because the tease of what Nick Cage offers as far as, like, a star in the film is helpful to probably get this movie made. So, you know, it would have to be sold in a different way going forward. So, but yeah, I like this movie. It's probably in that, like, I don't know. It's a like a solid 3 versus, like, all these other 3s, maybe a little higher, 3.25, somewhere in that range, where it's like, it's possibly a top 10.
I told you, like, so real quick, and I won't belabor this point, but, like, I like some of the shots they use, like the home, like you're using a home camera, like, the first time they got in the dune buggy and we saw that perspective, like, kind of out, but it looked like someone was filming it. And then when they threw themselves in the locker at the end, I liked the way they filmed that shot of them being inside the box with everything going over them. I thought that was cool, man.
Yeah.
And what'd you think about the big wonder wheel of those things just rolling down the street?
Yeah. It's, in a weird way, it's like an alien version of like those, like the Star Wars prequels, those robots that kind of roll downhill and then form out to like shoot guns. It has like that feel to it, but they're obviously furry and animated. It's weird.
All right.
So there's that. But yeah, again, an enjoyable movie. A movie I like better than this, not to like compare and slander immediately, but like just moving on to the next one, Snack Shack. This was a movie that was recommended to me, or at least like I caught on another podcast where they were speaking more glowing of like the better movies of 2024. And this was one that, based on if you saw the trailer, had me intrigued. This currently sits as somewhere between like my top five, top six movies of the year so far. This is directed by Adam Ramier. It's about inseparable best friends AJ and Moose, who decide to run the local pool's snack shack after their plan to sell homebrewed beer goes down the drain. Things take a turn when they meet Brooke, an effortlessly cool lifeguard who puts their big plans and friendship at risk. Yeah, this movie is at least a 3.5, might feel better than even that. No real like stars. Like you have David Costable, who I've liked in a lot of television stuff. I believe Suits, Billions, Breaking Bad, things, The Wire, things of that nature. But ultimately, it's these two guys, and honestly, and the third who they mentioned, Brooke, the female, who again has not been in much. All these guys, not much at all. I believe Connor Sherry had a small role in Terminalist, I think, and you know, Gabriel LaBelle is like the more known guy because he played young Spielberg in The Fablemans,
right?
So of the two guys, he's probably the more known. But man, just it felt like, I don't know, not Dazed and Confused energy, but because it's set in the early 90s, but it still had like, you know how the early 90s were, mm-hmm. how it still felt like the 80s. You know, like the grunge era where everybody's in flannels and sad and whatever, like, and heroin takes over. Like, you know, the weird part, you know, that nexus of like 88 to 92 where it was that era. So this is where that's set. And like one of the characters even comes home from Kuwait or Iraq, one of the two, where it was in Desert Storm as part of that whole thing. So that's the time period. It's like the summer in between grades. And these kids are just like a bunch of, they're like intelligent dumbasses because they're so young that they're naive to like how they shouldn't be doing shit. But they're just running cons left and right where they actually pull them off all the time. And they're just constantly running stuff. And part of the reason why they are able to open the snack shack is that they wanted the OTB. As like 15-year-olds or whatever. So like they're crazy cons, they're crazy kids, and the relationship between them is so genuine. Like it's not saccharine, but you also feel for them as a relationship and how it gets kind of, they get caught in the love triangle stuff as well as like other stuff that will kind of break them apart as like time goes on, and will their friendship survive all this kind of a thing. But I just love how fun and goofy it is on top of being effective at those other things as the movie progresses too. So I don't know. I just had a lot of fun with this one, and it's, like I said, top five, top six of the year for me, for something that I didn't even know existed.
Right. Let you know, this is on my list because before you told me you watched this movie, I was flicking through Prime Video and I saw it come up and I almost rented it that night. And I ended up watching, I think it was Arcadian instead.
Yeah, there's a few other movies I have on the watch list of like underrated movies or movies that have been scored highly, but a lot of people aren't talking about them. Hundreds of Beavers, I think it's called, is like on my list. That just seems pure goof. That I want to see. Was it Last Stop at Yuma County? I believe it is the what's his name, Jim Cummings, right? Yeah. The guy, his new movie there that is again getting scored very well. And you know, again, another like 90 minute movie, crime drama.
Those are perfect.
Limited location. Give it to me. Put it right in my veins. But instead, I watch like Mean Girls because it's, you know, on streaming and available. And it's another one of those movies that when I open up 2024 movies, it's like one of the most popular ones of the year, but I just hadn't seen it. So I wanted to check it out. It was fine. I don't think it was worthy of, you know, even trying to like redo or eclipse the original in any way. I think the best part about it is the deep, deep cast, and they're just really good. The problem is like, it's either I've seen this before, or, and there was like maybe, cause it's a musical, it has like a lot of songs mixed in. I feel like there's like one or two that are like really solid, good songs. And then there's just a lot of like, this is just explainer of the plot kind of moving along kind of songs where I didn't think they stood out. Right. So it's worth watching, but it's not going to blow you away. And especially if you've watched the original, it's also not going to blow you away because it's too familiar. It's too new. You know, it's got all that kind of stuff. But again, the cast is where it's at. And I, you know, because going in was Andre Rice, I guess. I'm probably butchering. Yeah. Yeah. Even how it's explained, it seems about right. I've liked her since like when she was a little kid in The Nice Guys. She was great, but then has slowly started, you know, becoming bigger and bigger. And this is kind of like her breakout kind of like lead thing. I loved her in Honor Society. That was for Paramount Plus, you know, senior year. She's got like a lot of stuff when she's not being in the later Spider-Man movies. Renee Rapp, very compelling as Regina George. But she just doesn't, I don't feel for her as much as I did the prior iteration of Regina George. So I think that tells you about the movie altogether. Right. The person I liked the most was Avantika. She's the one who plays Karen Shetty. She's like kind of, she's like the Ditz character of this. And like her song that she has, especially like there's like a Halloween party and she has like a whole Halloween and being slutty on Halloween song. That's very funny. So like she stood out for me too. But yeah, and like it's a deep cast, enjoyable cast, but you're also going to be like, okay, like I could have gone without it too. So I wonder, because they kind of say that the musical on Broadway is different than the movie enough, and this one is kind of a mix between the two and added other things. So I don't know. I don't know if any of them all need to exist outside of the original movie, but enjoy whatever you like. So again, it's kind of like a middling grade for me too there. Okay. But yeah, other than that, keep following my written reviews on whatsonnetflix.com. I just did Thelma the Unicorn, which sounds like, okay, dude, whatever. But, and again, it's a very weird movie, but for like, if you're going to watch something with your kids, if you have young kids or whatever, this you might enjoy because it's like the guys who made Napoleon Dynamite and Nacho Libre doing like a animated movie about like a pony who gets somehow convinces people that she's a unicorn and then becomes a superstar, and it's like the trappings of fame stuff and whatever else, and has like a really strong voice cast. So it's interesting, like almost like too good, like holy shit, like why is Zach Galifianakis and Jemaine Clement and like all these people, like holy crap, real deep cast. And then Brittany Howard, who I like from Alabama Shakes and her solo career, she plays Thelma and does all the singing, and her voice is great. So you could do worse. I also have Mother of the Bride. That was the week before when we were gone. And then this week will be Jennifer Lopez in Atlas, which is that kind of like the weirdest, like, are they doing a pro AI movie? Kind of that I'm going to have to parse through. So wish me luck. Outside of that, anything else for you that either you're looking forward to, might do this weekend, any of those type of things?
For sure, it's a Furiosa weekend for me, buddy. So, yes, 12,
you're going to catch up with Apes or not?
I am. That's because I wanted to see it initially, and then I was shocked on how well it did at the box office, and I was shocked on how well it's being received. So yes, I am going to get to Apes too, but first and foremost is Furiosa, and then I will get to Apes because I have a little freer weekend since I don't have football and soccer this weekend. So
right,
those two are on my list, and I will see Atlas as well.
Can I toss something out to you that I heard that scares the shit out of me? So this is the fourth Apes movie, and I'm aware that like before, you know, in the 70s version, they made many 10, Apes films.
Yeah, of them,
This one I heard has like a 7-movie arc.
Oh my God.
So
it's like the monkey version of Avatar.
Yes. I'm wondering, because this movie made money, like how far are they going to take this?
Oh God. So I'll be dead before they reach the conclusion of this franchise.
Yes, exactly. And it might be the cause. Who knows? By then. great job by you, man. I, too, will be watching Furiosa. So everyone out there, be sure to like and subscribe and tell a friend about the pod. Come back for, obviously, when we will be covering that next week. It's getting really solid reviews out of Cannes and a lot of praise, so I'm very much looking forward to it. And obviously as a fan of Fury Road and Road Warrior and Mad Max Overtime, I loved all those, so I will continue to watch those. I hope you guys continue to come back and listen, follow us on socials at Recent Act Pod, and just come on back. Thank you for listening, and we'll be here again next week for more Recent Activity.